The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Did a good job hosting in my stead last week.
Thank you, thank you. All thanks to everyone who was involved.
Indeed. And, of course, the person that did host last week and here this week is at @agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have @PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Yay! And I found my watch. That was the most exciting thing that happened to me this week.
Yay! Yeah.
Is that an Android watch?
It is.
That's pretty awesome.
And a fairly nice one, too, and I've lost it for, like, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Where was it?
Underneath a comic box.
Go figure.
Right, where else would it be? Not in the comic box between comics?
No, it was underneath this weird spot.
And not with us tonight, but always in our thoughts and sometimes watching live while he's at work, @RoddyCat on Twitter.
Yay, Roddy!
And shout out to @MattWang97, who can't watch live tonight, but of course, supporter of the show and sometimes special guest host.
The bum.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account @CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus, search for The Click Nation, or go to google.com/+ The Click Nation. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/TheClickNation. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. You can listen to us and all the various CSPN podcast shows by going to the website, cspn.us. Use the #ComicBookChronicles or CBCron on your favorite social media websites to join in on the conversation. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And make sure to buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise at the CSPN shop. You can go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Buy t-shirts or mugs or phone cases and much more. All righty.
Cool.
Let's see what we got from cinematic news for the past week. There's some rumor about Walking Dead cast justifies Garrett Dillahunt as Negan. This mysterious right. Negan I always see people talking about online.
Is it Negan? Dirt, you got to help me out.
Negan is how I've always said it.
Okay. So this particular rumor was pretty much debunked later in the week.
Well,
it's the last story.
I don't know if it was debunked so much as just everybody trying to like put the snake back in the bag. I don't know what the phrase is. I was trying to think of what
cat in the bag.
Archie Comics characters are undergoing massive changes for a CW show.
Just one thing. The CW is actively seeking a hearing impaired actor, okay, whatever, to play the emo heartthrob version of Jughead. Okay, I've already tuned out. You've already lost me. An emo heartthrob version of Jughead.
Yikes.
Stay tuned for more news
That's
on that.
Pretty bad.
Supergirl. Terrible. Supergirl as Tawny Cypress as anti-alien senator. An international Star Wars trailer shows off lots of new action. And if you want to see more footage, tune in to Jimmy Kimmel Live tonight, where I believe they're going to show even more footage. It's only a little over a month away.
Scary.
And that was the next story, of course. Batman Bad Blood set for February release, the next animation movie from DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers. Some information on when, I guess, we'll see the Captain America Civil War trailer. The trailer is almost complete, according to the Russo brothers, when they had a chat at a Cleveland Community College. A few special effects left to edit in, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, it makes sense that it would be that this particular trailer is going to be shown before Star Wars. Get in front of as many eyeballs as possible.
Right. Justice League Unlimited comes to Blu-ray.
For $1 million.
Of course it is.
Are you being facetious? Or are you, or, yes. or?
No, that is not the accurate price, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than a car payment.
Yikes.
I mean, it is on Netflix, so you could just watch it there.
Yeah, but you don't own it. It's on Netflix.
You can put it on anytime you damn well please.
You don't get the commentaries and behind the scenes.
That is true.
Special stuff.
I used to enjoy that. Mariah Carey joins voice cast of the Lego Batman movie, and she's playing Commissioner Gordon. So I guess Babs
gender-bending.
Is Babs going to be the commissioner?
Are they gender bending?
Don't know. Mark Dacascos comes to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Iron Chef for America, Sherman, and Hawaii Five-O baddie Mark Dacascos.
Okay.
The note from Reddit says, Manny from Brotherhood of the Wolf, also the chairman from Iron Chef America.
All right.
Fox acquires Kazu Kibushi's Amulet series with film franchise hopes.
Okay.
Fox announces Gotham winter hiatus. So those of you that are fans of the show will have to wait till February 29th, 2016, aka Leap Day.
That's a long wait.
I was about to say, when is the last episode scheduled to run in the first half of the season?
It says Gotham Season 2 only has one major break. 11 episodes on either side. There are only 3 new episodes left before the winter hiatus.
Oh, okay.
So depending on when this note was added, there's probably 2 because he probably added this last week.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's actually late November. Wow. Like Thanksgiving might be like the last, you know, week.
So use that 2-month break to get caught up, people.
Yeah.
I won't, but Lucifer gets a premiere date. Speaking of Fox, January premiere, pairing it with part 2 of the revived X-Files limited series on Monday, January 25th at 9 p.m. Han Solo film is reportedly Lawrence Kasdan's last Star Wars. I don't even know who that is.
He's a guy.
He's already made 3 Star Wars movies before that.
There was a Miles Morales Spider-Man Lives fan film where Miles Morales looked like he was in his mid-30s.
Ha ha ha!
I haven't watched the whole thing, but dude was
so old.
Yeah. DC TV boss may push Netflix Hulu streaming more than a year.
What? Wait, read that again.
It says DC, I'm just reading the headline, DC TV boss may push Netflix-Hulu streaming more than a year. It says, this past week, Time Warner executive Jeff Bukes spoke to reporters of some blah, blah, blah. Of some international dissatisfaction with DC TV series, suggesting that a longer streaming window might aid in building live ratings and allowing more available past episodes to TV providers. Shows like Arrow and The Flash placed their entire seasons within Netflix stock shortly before the new season premieres, while analysts say some of the media executives are looking at Netflix as a digital distributor who has gained too much power. So basically they don't want to, I guess, drop all the seasons at one time, I guess is what they're saying, or maybe not have stuff go straight to digital after its air date, maybe for episodes.
Right. Or maybe they want to keep it on their websites or on demand longer.
This is what he's saying. What he's saying is when you go into, like, if you have Comcast, Xfinity, you go into their video on demand library,
right.
You can go and there's, you know, 3 or 4 episodes, but you can't get any more than that. But you can go now to Netflix and you can watch the whole first season. So he's saying what they need to do is push Netflix out, like,
longer. Right.
Yeah, season 1 would show up when season 3 is about to hit TV, but all of season 2 should be on your cable company's on demand where you can get it there, because that's already like their streaming process, and things like Netflix is a different channel outside of their distribution. He thinks that video on demand is something that they should spend more time, you know, bumping up and pushing.
They want to push that more. That's really what it is.
And that is true. I've run into that before where I've wanted to watch a series, and by the time I go to check it on demand, the first or second episode has already dropped off, so I go, well, I'll just wait till it hits Netflix then. I have done that, so that makes sense to me.
And that's more of an issue with, but the TV providers need to get in with that.
Well, and that's what he's saying. That's something they need to work on.
Oh, okay. I got it. Winona Earp debuts at Sci-Fi and returns to IDW in 2016. Van Helsing reboot to be written by John Spates and Eric Heiserer. Snowpiercer being adapted for television. Emmy Landecker to join Doctor Strange. And like we mentioned earlier, in reference to our first story, Jeffrey Dean Morgan cast as Negan.
Right. This is, I think, final now, right?
We assume.
I believe this is confirmed. So
as Roddy Camp says it, he's heard it pronounced like Regan, Negan, Regan.
Reagan.
Reagan. Reagan. I always thought it was Negan, but anyway.
All right.
Wait, just real quick, did we talk about Jim and the Holograms last week at all? I don't think we've talked about that, have
we?
The
book?
No, the movie. The
movie bombing? That would have been like movie. 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, that was 2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm. I think we did. I think we talked about how it bombed.
Well, it's gone worse. Like, opening weekend was bad, but now it's even worse.
How does it get worse?
It's pulled out of all but like 50 theaters in the United States. Like, it opened... hit over 2,000 theaters, and they've all backed out because it's been so terrible. I think it's going down as one of the worst movies from that studio of all time.
Wow.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. Jim. It was only a $5 million budget, so it wasn't a huge budget to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But total gross so far is only $255,000.
Wow.
Yeah. It opened in 2,417 theaters, and as of this week, it's only in like 50.
Yikes. Yikes, 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 yikes.
I think the only movie that's done worse was that, what's her name? Who played Daisy Duke? No, who played Daisy Duke in Dukes of Hazzard?
The reboot? Yeah. In the reboot?
Jessica Simpson.
Jessica Simpson. She was in some movie that bombed.
See, what's funny is that, you know, my only real commentary on this is. Jim and the Holograms came out to such little fanfare and, you know, and obviously on such a shoestring budget, it didn't even reach out and market itself to, you know, what you would think would be the core audience, because that's not who they're going for. They're going for, like, you know, the youth and whatever. But it's the 30-something ladies who were still nostalgic for the character and the story and the cartoon. I don't think any of them actually knew the movie was being released. So,
well, I think there was also a certain amount of they realized how bad it was, and they weren't going to...
put more money into it?
Yeah. It's like they don't want to throw bad money after good, you know?
Right, you get to a certain point.
You just got to cut bait and... I mean, even people internally were upset about the film before it even came out, saying, what the heck is this movie? This has, you know, nothing to do with Jim. It's just basically the story of some spoiled little girl who becomes a rock star. And so a lot of people were unhappy with it, you know, from the get-go. So, but yeah, it's gone down as one of the worst of all time. And of course, this is the guy that did G.I. Joe Retribution. And so he was pushing for crossovers between all these different toy properties and trying to push for... I think at one time he was pushing for the He-Man movie, and I think they told him basically, you're done. You got nothing left.
Wow. That's awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Story just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And what a proper setup now for an ad read. Audible.com. For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can choose from books such as The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea by Chris Jericho, The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton, Jurassic Park 25th Anniversary Edition by Michael Crichton, and Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles for your free audiobook.
All right.
Let's see. Down to the comic book news of the week. The man who created the original Batmobile has died.
That rest in peace.
George Barris. Rest in peace indeed.
Yeah, rest in peace. I was about to say, if anyone here has ever, like, sat home on, like, a rainy Saturday and pulled up reruns or even the live episodes of the Barrett Jackson automobile auction on like Velocity or what used to be the speech channels on Velocity or Discovery. George Barris is actually making appearances pretty much up until he died. He was making appearances at these auctions with these iconic cars that he created, and you know, as they were being sold off for charity or for just for profit, he would appear, you know, alongside with some of these cars. So he was pretty active, pretty much right up until he passed.
And DC Entertainment released an official statement: "This new Marvel Avengers game has a unique twist. It takes a decidedly different approach from past titles. Marvel Avengers Academy is a new adventure/simulation for mobile devices that sees the Avengers cast reimaged as student versions of themselves."
We are not target demographic.
Yeah. J. Scott Campbell's Danger Girl to get an expanded sketchbook next year.
Okay.
Sideshow debuts Green Lantern premium format figure at being Sideshow Collectibles. Eric Powell's Judge Dredd kicked out of Free Comic Book Day 2016.
What?
And as Roddy Cat says, man, people don't respect commas in their articles nowadays. 2000 AD has had a comic in Free Comic Book Day for 4 years now. This year, a restriction on size was added to the Free Comic Book Day board as they considered this year's included items. And I guess the British standard size magazine that 2000 AD puts out was too big. Comets Tribe also out of Free Comic Book Day 2016.
Yikes.
Titan revisits the Fourth Doctor in new Doctor Who comic series. Roddy Cat says, my Doctor. Publishers Weekly puts out its list of the best graphic novels of 2015. Marvel dominates comic book sales in October.
Did you guys take a look at these charts? You know, like this article, when I saw this come out, it was pretty stark looking at the numbers. And
I see what you did there with Iron Man being number one.
The sales make sense, though, because, I mean, it's all number one from all different Marvel or Star Wars.
Yep.
Nothing to see here.
The one thing that I found interesting, though, is that the top 10 best-selling graphic novels, number four was Deathstroke.
Really?
And I think part of that is because it was the box set that came with the Deathstroke mask.
Oh.
And so that's something that...
drove sales.
Yeah, because we actually sold several of those ourselves, and that's something... You know, normally on those trades, if someone asks for them, we order them. If they have a sale, we might order one or two for the shelf, but for that one, we specifically ordered some because we knew people would come in wanting the mask.
Oh, speaking of which, I'm glad you brought that up. DC Publicity emailed me their, like, holiday shopping program or whatever, and it's got it had that whatever trade with the mask in it, and they were like, if you see any stuff that interests you, email us and let us know. We may ship you, you know,
a mask
or ship you some of them. I was like, yeah, send me, I like that one. So who knows, maybe I'll get a Deathstroke mask on my front door. I will say I like the I know Tony Daniel stopped doing a lot of the art on that series, but I like the Tyler Kirkham. His stuff's pretty good. It's just like Tony Daniel's. So
all right, here you go. Here's the picture of it, and it doesn't really show up well in this picture, but on the right side of the face, where the you know, patched eye would be, where you see all that hatching, several of those hatches are actually cut out holes. So when you put the mask on, you can still see out of it. But from a distance, it looks like it's just part of that hatching texture on the side of the face. So it actually does a pretty good effect.
Okay. Marvel launches Deadpool and the Mercs for Money from Cullen Bunn and Salva Espin. And I still haven't read Deadpool number one.
It was okay.
It was all right.
Rob Liefeld launches new Deadpool Bad Blood graphic novel. More Deadpool.
Rob Liefeld, that was the part that we were all holding out for.
Yeah, you know it.
Oh, Boom Studios teases a new comic from friend of the show Ryan Ferrier and Daniel Bayless. We'll have to get them on the show to talk about it.
Yep.
Darwin Cook and Jimmy Palmiotti create comic strip on beer bottles with Arcade Brewery. Sandman Overture and Evening with J.H. Williams III on Saturday, November 14th from 2 to 6 p.m. If you happen to live in San Francisco, stop over at the Isotope Comics. Make yourself into a Star Wars or Marvel action figure at Target.
I was just reading Roddy's summary of this, and that sounds pretty cool. Haven't they done something like this before, though?
Probably.
Where you can, you know, you can get yourself scanned with the 3D imaging and put yourself in the costumes. The heroes and costumes available include Captain America, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Black Widow, male Jedi Knight, female Jedi Knight, and the classic Imperial Stormtrooper. Yeah, the figures cost $60 and can be paid for at the respective store in which they are ordered using a kiosk-printed voucher. So that sounds like, you know, it's facial mapping, so it's really just a face, but it's pretty cool.
Marvel pulls back the cover on its Avengers bedding for adults. As Roddy Cat says, guaranteed to test your marriage or singledom in a timely fashion, or not. Lego Marvels.
Oh, I was just going to say, Tim, it's funny. Like, I looked at it, I was just like, wow, that's cool, but that's pushing it very, very much.
Got to grow up sometime.
Yeah.
Lego Marvels Avengers announces Mantis, Peggy Carter, and more as playable characters.
Cool.
Aspen Comics teams with Vision Books for digital 3D animated comics. Something that we'll get into in the reviews in a little bit, but fan favorite X-Men returned in Uncanny Avengers, and I was happy.
We'll get to it.
Look into the future with a preview of DC Comics Justice League Tarot Deck. Okay. Quentin Tarantino and Zach Meyer introduced The Hate for Eight as a comic for Playboy. Go ahead, Playboy. Archie Comics rolls out upgraded app, new digital series, and merges unlimited reading.
Yeah, they're basically launching a motion comic app that has motion comics and regular comics, and you can buy individual issues or pay for an all-you-can-read subscription, like Marvel Unlimited.
Got it. And their stuff is still on Comixology, I assume, right?
Right, yeah.
It's not the old Dark Horse app type deal where...
No.
Yeah. Because at first when I heard it, I was like, well, that's stupid. Why? I was like, did they learn from Dark Horse? But I was like, wait a minute, I actually bought Archie number one when it came out a couple months ago on Comixology. So they're just doing their own app also.
Well, it's weird because, you know, I follow a lot of tech stuff as well as, you know, comic stuff. And a lot of people who do tablet reviews, they'll talk about putting different apps on the tablets and how well they work. And a lot of them will put the Marvel Comics app, not the Marvel Unlimited app, but the Marvel Comixology app, where it's basically Comixology, but only the Marvel Comics. Because somehow that's the only app they know about. They don't realize that there's an app that gives you everything. For whatever reason, it's just like, oh, I saw Avengers, so I went and did a search in the Play Store, and I saw Marvel Comics, and I installed the app. And so that's the app that people use. And it's funny sometimes because you'll say something to them like, why would you use that app? Why not just install Comixology and then you can read everything? And they have no idea it even exists. So for a lot of these companies like IDW and Archie and, you know, Marvel, DC, they all have their own. It actually works for them to have their own, you know, company-branded app, because a lot of times people don't go into something like the App Store looking for digital comics. They go to the App Store looking for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Batman or Spider-Man or, you know, whatever. And so that's just another way that they're able to get at people. And then people, once they have it, they don't look for anything else. They just go, oh, well, this is what it is. This is, must be all there is to it. And that's where it stays.
All right.
I need to dive more into the tech stuff myself as far as seeing what all the blogs and websites are keeping up with. Start a tech podcast.
That's what's it's in the discussions. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Is it time for our second ad read? Or you want to hit this last news story?
No, because that should be up in the clickbait, looks like.
All right.
Let's see, in Variant Corner, tell your Valentine, I want to believe you'll be mine with X-Files variant cover. And IDW announces Valentine's Day covers for Jim and the Holograms, Moon of the Vampire, and more. Hopefully, the Jim and the Holograms covers will be more successful than the movie.
I can tell you for certain that the comics are still running fairly strong. I don't see very many... many of them on the shelves. Obviously, I don't know if they, you know, if various comic book stores around New York City have ordered a lot, but, you know, they generally don't stick around too long. That's just, you know, that's anecdotal evidence on my part, so.
I'm just saying how Dirt hates Harley Quinn.
Never cared for the character.
That's about how it is with me and Deadpool. I mean, I like Deadpool when he first debut, but now I'm just eh.
But, you want me to do the second ad read, Tim?
Go for it.
Which one did you do first?
I did.
What did you do?
I closed it already, but
what was it, Skull Candy?
No, let me go back.
You did Audible. Didn't you?
Yeah, Audible.
Okay, I'll do Amazon because it's the shortest. all right. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc., etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today. And if you shop at Amazon often, make sure to bookmark the link or add it as your homepage so that you can help the CSPN each time you order. We thank you for your support. Nice.
What should we get to first? So much.
There's a lot. What was the first book you guys read this week? Because I can tell you the first thing I read this week, because it was available early.
Superman American Alien.
Correct! Correct. That was available to us very, very early. And I too, picked up a solid copy, physical copy.
Oh, you mean, yes. We all did.
Oh.
Yeah, look at that.
Okay, now so I see the cover. There you go.
Craziness. So what did you guys think of this somewhat rejiggered origin, or at least story of a youthful Clark Kent discovering his powers? That's the gist of this.
It was fun.
I was about to say, there's no real spoiling it here. It's just a retelling and a reimagining of young Clark Kent kind of discovering his powers.
It didn't really retell his origin, since it was just like one tale of him trying to cope with his powers.
Yeah, it's filling in holes here and there from his history of, going back to time periods that you don't really think about what it would be like having to go through this stuff, the first time you learn how to fly, or the first time, whatever.
Well, it's funny, like I grew up reading like reprints of, I guess you would call it Silver Age or even Golden Age, like Superman, where I think it might have been Kurt Swan art where the Kents basically, one of the things that I remembered reading when I was a kid, the Kents basically had baby Clark. They used him as they kind of treated him like a kite, where they had, a string, as baby Clark is, or infant Clark is floating in the air, trying to guide him along as if he were a kite, with a rope, so to teach him how to steer. There's something similar to that in this issue.
One thing, Max Landis, who wrote this, is a really weird guy. His brain is working on another level than the rest of humanity, and sometimes it's for the best, and sometimes it's better to just push him out of the way with long stick and work your way around.
Keep it to yourself, weirdo.
But he was going into this with the idea that he wasn't going to retcon anything necessarily. He just wanted to flesh out some of these ideas of what life is like as Superman as a kid. What it's like in a small town where you're nobody and suddenly you're somebody. Where you're a regular kid one moment and the next moment you're something far different. And how the parents would react. And that's, we always think of the Kents as being, gray-haired, old farmers. You don't really think about their days as being young parents either.
Right.
And so he just wanted to flesh out some of these ideas. And I thought the artwork kind of threw me off a little bit in certain spots. It's very cartoony, almost like a simple anime meets Archie style in a couple spots.
Agreed.
Which is a little weird. But I thought the story at every point was just so well done. And even a lot of the coloring that went into it, the sunsets over the cornfields and the blue skies and all of that, trying to get that feel of flyover country that, there's no giant buildings in your way, there's not traffic everywhere, there's no smog, completely different feel from where he's at, Metropolis and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought it just did a really good job of painting this portrait of this young kid. Kids have problems enough going through life trying to figure out what they're like, and then you add in the stuff he has to go through being a superhero. It just made it very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I just noticed on the cover that there's the S burnt into the cornfield.
Cornfield.
Yep.
You know what though? Having read I guess a recap, or at least a trade paperback version as a kid, of the original Superman, the original fleshing out of Superman's origins in the Silver Age. You know, I really came to appreciate that, and that's sort of kind of etched in my brain. I think my favorite part of this version of the retelling and the reimagining of it was the two-page spread right at the end, right after the next issue, where they show, and I'm going to hold it up to the screen, where they show kind of like a bulletin board and what's on the Kent's desks.
His workbench.
At home. Yeah, his workbench, I guess. I really like this because it really gave you a lot of info as to where Landis might be going with this. There's obviously the hint of spoiler alert. I mean, I'm holding the freaking page up, but for audio purposes, I'm going to ring the spoiler bell. There's the hint of kryptonite on the workbench, and also a hint of what Martha and Jonathan Kent did before they ran into Clark coming out of, you know, falling out of the sky. I thought that was pretty interesting too.
So they had a kid and lost it?
That's my understanding.
Yeah, drunk driving tragedy.
Oh, another question. Oh, that is kryptonite on there. Another question I had is they seem to not have any problem like having the local pilot fly around and try to catch their kid flown in the air, so they weren't scared of like revealing his secret to anyone.
I think they, yeah, I was about to say, I think they were, but I think they just had to at that point reveal it to somebody, right?
Well, I think there was something in Action Comics when the storyline kicked off where the whole town had been taken over by the shadow creatures.
Right.
As part of that, where the government was stealing all of Clark Kent's friends and family to interrogate them and whatever. And I want to say it was somewhere in there was some throwaway line about one of the old men sitting in front of the corner grocery store or something, and he knew Clark's secret, and he just blurted it out loud. There was something about the fact that he had known it for a long time. Like, a lot of people in Smallville, because it's a small town, because it's, you know, this close-knit community, there's only so many secrets you can keep, that a lot of people in the town knew already, you know, that there was something different about him, that, you know, he was some sort of superpowered hero or whatever, because they've seen him on the planet, you know, aliens and whatnot. So they knew, they always knew that there was something different about him, something special about him, that he had some sort of powers or whatnot, and that it wasn't necessarily completely hidden from them, but at the same time, it's a small town, so they all respect privacy, and they're not going to say anything, you know, in polite society about it, but behind the scenes, everybody understood that that's what's going on. I want to say it was in that storyline that we got a glimpse of that, so, I mean, I don't know if that was something just random that matches up with this, or if that was Landis in the background just telling people what his ideas for the stories were.
All right.
So safe to say we all liked this.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I liked it very much.
Cool. Let's see. Do you want to continue with DC?
Sure.
Batman 46.
I did read this.
More continuation with Mr. Bloom. And even, this was one of the last few books I read before the show. Just kind of thinking back to it. It doesn't really seem like anything super significant happened in it. Commissioner Gordon is trying to stave off an army of bat drones being sent in to take on Mr. Bloom and De Niro's. I'm more intrigued with what Duke Thomas is up to.
Is that the
around.
Robin?
Yeah, the Robin that appears in the story.
Yeah, I was going to say that was one of the things I took away from this, is that they're pushing him a lot harder as being a new Robin. Like, the official Robin is, I'm getting the feeling that he's going to be pegged pretty soon as the next in line as a Robin. I also like the shot of all the different prototype suits and the idea that they have of sending Batman other places, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I read this, the more I liked, like, I'm more comfortable with Commissioner Gordon in the suit, and I like him more. And the more I see of Bruce Wayne as just a dude, the less I like him. Like, I don't care anymore about him. They've made him
to Bruce anyway.
It's just, he's not very likable. Like, there's nothing to draw you to him. He's just a dude.
Well, he's lost a lot of, I was about to say, you know what? He's a lot like the Vision was, minus his emotional history. You know, he was this blank slate, and now he's developing into a new character that we're not familiar with, and he doesn't, you know, he's not very You know, he's not holding back any secrets. He's not, you know, looking to intervene when something bad happens to change into Batman. You know what I mean?
And part of the problem is I'm not in any way intrigued by him, and I'm not interested in finding out what happens with him next. I'm not going to care about Bruce Wayne until he wakes up.
Gotcha. I think there's a lot of people like that, to be honest.
Everything I'm seeing about him here and now, I kind of gloss over those pages. My eyes just kind of get the glaze on them, and I'm just like, okay, well, I have to read this to get to the page that comes after it.
Right. I'd be interested to know if there's been any sort of dip in sales since, you know, they've been sort of teasing along what's going to happen to Bruce Wayne.
I doubt it. Batman seems to, at least under Snyder, seems to be a good seller. Mm. That's just mine.
You can look up. There's a website that tracks that.
Right. It's just, you know, it's just something that occurred to me. Like, I wonder, because I know that I've personally, this is, I think, the first physical issue of Batman I've picked up in a while. I picked it up just to see, you know, what was going on. I was kind of intrigued by the appearance of Duke as one of the primary Robins from the We Are Robin book appearing in this book. I thought that was pretty cool.
All right. Over the last 3 months, sales have fallen.
There you go.
Batman 43 was 124,000, almost 700 copies. So if you want to say 125,000, roughly.
Right.
September was issue 44, 114,500. October, Batman 45, 109,300.
Wow.
So it's dropped almost 15,000 copies in 3 months.
Right. The longer this drags on, we'll see how that really affects the sales.
Yikes.
Natural attrition.
Could be. It could be readership attrition, because I think a lot, you know, there may very well be a lot of people waiting for Bruce to return, you know, as Batman.
All right.
Any other DC?
There was the various Justice League Dark Side.
Yeah, did you guys read those?
I have not yet.
Yeah, I read them both. Shazam 1, you can pretty much skip unless you are completely tied into the Justice League Dark Constantine...
magic stuff?
Yeah, mystical, magical worlds. Basically, Shazam loses his connection with the gods that had powered him, and there's another set of gods trying to power him. Gods
from Apocalypse? New Genesis? I gotcha.
And so it's like a really bad Charles Dickens Christmas Carol, where...
Really?
These different gods are pulling them to these different places, kind of explaining to him what they do and where they come from and how they interact with his life, and he has to somehow beat them or learn about them or learn their secret or something before he moves on to the next one. And then at the end, he defeats Darkseid's dad and then goes boldly forward as the new powered Shazam.
Okay.
I mean, it's really one of those things where... If you saw that Darkseid died and Shazam got a bunch of funky new powers out of it and has a new outfit that has that new god kind of look to it, and you don't need any explanation beyond that, then, yeah, you don't need this book. I mean, this is just a book to put names in front of you.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't matter. I was bored. I mean, that's really what it came down to. I was just bored by it.
That's awful.
The Green Lantern one was luckily a little bit better.
Okay.
It wasn't fantastic by any stretch, but it was better in the sense that Green Lantern is given the powers to be the God of Light because, of course, you know, him with the rings and the energy and whatnot. And he discovers that with that power, he has the ability to basically remake reality. It's almost like the reality gem of the Infinity Gauntlet. And so he has to decide, does he want to use this in order to change everything, or does he want to use this in order to change nothing, is basically what it comes down to. He has to make a moral choice. And he looks back on his life, and he realizes that with his ring and the ability to mess with reality, he technically can time travel, because he can technically go to any point in reality and change it. So there's a lot of, you know, like, big questions put in front of him with a lot of the tragedies he's been through, and can he change things, and should he change things, and a lot of those big questions. And so he does a couple big things for the Green Lantern world. I won't spoil exactly what he does, but if you're a reader of Green Lanterns, you've been following the Lost Army, any of that kind of stuff, he does kind of answer some of those questions and take care of some of those things.
Okay.
And then the book ends with not the ending I think anybody really expected. And I'm you know, again, not trying to spoil things, so I'm trying to be somewhat vague here.
Right.
But when it ends, you're definitely in a different spot than where you thought you would be at the beginning.
Okay.
So I enjoyed it more. It's more key to the character, and if you're a Green Lantern reader, you definitely want to read it because it is going to deal with some things that have been going on in the Green Lantern books.
Right. So of the Darkseid War one-shots, I know that Batman was okay to fairly good. The Superman one was okay, but since then we haven't had top-notch one-shots.
I would say the Green Lantern one is better than the Superman.
Okay.
The Batman I actually liked quite a bit, and the Green Lantern I would put in second place.
Okay.
Shazam has by far been the worst, and the Superman one is just kind of out there wherever.
Right. Okay.
Have there been any others besides those four?
No, there was two the first week. I forget what it was. Two last week, right? And I guess two a week.
Yeah, what was the two? What were the two last week?
The Flash and...
Oh, right. Flash and Superman.
Oh, that's right.
Flash and Superman?
Yeah. So it was Batman... Batman came out.
It was Batman on its own, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Flash was another one that Flash and Superman are kind of floating out by themselves, kind of.
Although it felt like the Flash one was the one that tied the most directly into the Darkseid War story. You know, it kind of filled in a lot of those gaps, like in between panels.
From that
Justice League issue where all you see is him running to try to outrun the Black Racer, and that issue, that one shot, basically filled in all everything that's happening between panels.
Well, it did, but I mean, it was filling in.
The point is, it was filler, right?
Yeah.
So okay.
All right. So that is. I'm assuming that's it for DC now.
We're done with DC.
Yeah, because I read Batman Superman, but it wasn't anything special to write home about.
Okay.
Oh, well, Batman and Robin Eternal number 6. I read it was a Tony Daniel drawn one, so you think it, you know, so the major might be important, but not really.
Oh no.
I mean, what you got more background and history on Mother and how it ties into the Batman and Robin case from the past, but that's about it, really.
Okay.
Good art. And I forget who was the main writer on this one.
Well, Snyder's name is first.
Yeah, I was about to say Snyder and Tinian are both there.
Well, Snyder's is first on the cover, but Tinian is first on the inside.
So I guess they were the showrunners, but it's like they'd be listed as like showrunners, but then other writers would be listed.
Tinian is listed as the main writer on the
cover. Okay. So kind of an important one, I guess. Did they list them as showrunners? Story. Never mind. Okay. So... Yep. I'm trying to keep up with the weekly series. So far, so good.
All right. I applaud you, man. I know that Dirt was keeping up with Batman Eternal the best he could, so.
Only until they punked us with that Portuguese soap.
Oh, that's right. That's what I remember you trying to keep up with it for a time, so.
And then I dropped it like a bad habit.
Oh, boy.
I can quickly do... Actually, I didn't even... What did I read? Oh, I did read The Sender from Image. Didn't put it on my list.
Wow. I was going to say, if we want to go to Independence... So what do you think of The Sender?
Why is my... Was it 6? Sender number...
What 7, number? I think.
7. Was it 7?
I believe so.
Yeah, number 7. Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to read, but it's there on the cover.
Yeah.
I actually picked up the variant cover for this. When I saw this, I thought it was creepy.
Whoa.
It was like a claymation figure style.
Oh, that is kind of weird. We get a lot of information in this issue as far as we meet a new character. I don't want to spoil too much about who this new character, but my senses went off and I came to be correct once the revelation was shown at the end of the issue. Besides that, just more setup of how this group of rebellious robots came to rescue Tim 21 and the members of the UGC. He meets Tim 22, who has less emotions than Tim 21.
Mm-hmm.
But the real story has to do with this mystery person. And just, I guess, a little small background on this person. They're like a robot bounty hunter, more or less. Gets a job, goes and rounds up or kills the robots he's sent after. And this person is real interested in Tim 21. So.
Okay.
And shout-outs to Birthright, that also started back. I didn't get a chance to read that yet, but enjoyed the series.
Man, I haven't read that. I haven't read that in ages. How is that going?
It's good.
All right.
It was on a hiatus while the trade came out and whatnot. But like I said, I haven't read it yet. But trying to nerd image series, I'm trying to stay on top of.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. All right. If we're going to just clean up the rest of what we read this week before we hit all new, all different Marvel, I did read Dave 2, number 3, by a guest of the show, friend of the show, Ryan Ferrier, and Valentin Ramon. This is so awesome. This is a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. It's just a fun read. It reads so well. We are very much... neck deep in, spoiler alert, getting to the bell. We're neck deep in what the humans bring to the table in this story. And we find, and there's a little bit of time travel involved as well. And that's, you know, that's an interesting twist on the story because we haven't seen that particular mechanic or story mechanism to date in this book, so it's a pretty interesting way to drop it in. We have Dave's son or stepson, I can't remember all that well right now, but there's a there's some strife inside the family, and it's all over these humans that have appeared in the world of on Earth long after humanity was thought extinct. So that's the that's the catalyst for this story, and it's a lot of fun to read. I do recommend this. It is not necessary to have read the first volume of Dave. I think you do need to have read the first two issues because this definitely picks up on a lot of the events of the last two issues. So it may not necessarily be the most new reader friendly book, but you don't need all that much to get into the idea of this is a semi-post-apocalyptic world where humanity's gone but robots remain. And there's a lot of cool little pop culture references and quotes in here too. So, it's really a lot of fun. Sleeper candidate for click of the week for me this week.
I didn't get caught up on the first two issues of Dave.
Do it. It's good.
Good deal.
All right. So are we jumping into Marvel?
Wait. I've got a couple here.
What do you got?
Andre the Giant, Closer to Heaven, that was supposed to come out this week. For some reason, ours are coming in next week.
Okay.
So I'll talk about it next week, even though it's technically a this week release. But I definitely have one of those on order I want to read. And I'm somewhat upset I don't have my copy.
I got notified today that it is finally available to read on NetGalley.
Okay. I had a question, Dirk. Hmm? Do you guys get pop vinyls in your store?
Yes.
Did you happen to see the Andre the Giant pop vinyl?
I don't collect pop vinyls, so...
No, but did you see it in the store? Like, I didn't. I only collect, a random few, but I happened to be walking by when I was going to pick up the rest of my hip-hop covers this week at Midtown. I happened to walk past I was just kind of browsing through the store, and I happened to see the Andre the Giant pop vinyl, and it was remarkable. Remarkable how cool it was. I was like, oh, man, if I didn't want to like kind of jump in and just get like a random pop vinyl, like I've got a couple pop vinyls, but nothing approaching like an actual collection. Andre the Giant would have to be part of mine if I was going to start one. Mm. It was a really well done figure. So if you happen to like walk into your store tomorrow and look at the stack of pop vinyls that that are probably on display somewhere, take a look, see if you see the Andre the Giant one. It does look pretty nice.
Is it the 70s style with the frizzy hair or the 80s style with the short hair?
Short hair.
Okay.
It's still... it's like I said,
Reed versus Hulk Hogan version?
Yeah, it's still very, very much, it's evocative of that look.
Okay. Last Sons of America, this is from Boom. Philip Kennedy Johnson is the writer. I'm not familiar with him, but the artwork is by Matthew Dow Smith. It's one of the guys that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
This story is basically, in the future, some sort of biochemical terror attack has happened on the United States, and no one can have children. And so these brokers basically go to third world countries and find kids in orphanages or kids from bad homes, and basically buy them to take them back to the United States so that they can be adopted.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who are running it, who are the main characters of this book, it's two brothers. One of them is doing it because he actually wants to, help lift children out of poverty, give them a nicer home to go to. The other one just wants the money. So you have a little bit of conflict there between them. But at the same time, because of where they're working in some of these parts of the third world, they're not always well-received by the locals. you know, a lot of times they're seen as being steel kids and, you know, run off with them, whatever. And there are also groups who just go out and kidnap children. They just, you know, grab them off the streets and smuggle them out of the country and sell them on the black market, you know.
Right.
So they have to be careful of who they're in business with and who they, you know, work with, who they talk to and those types of things. So it's almost like technically what they're doing is legal, but nobody really likes it.
Right.
But they do have the opportunity to help some of these kids from time to time. So there's a lot of moral questions that come up of, you know, how much good they actually do and how much is, you know, profit driven and how much help they can actually be to people one child at a time. And, you know, some parents will change their mind after the fact and then what do you do? And, you know, all those types of issues come up. But then also they get caught. I won't spoil anything, but they get caught in a very bad circumstance. One of the people who oversees one of the, I guess you could say one of the locals, one of the powerful men in this area where they're at, he kind of watches over them and makes sure that that they're safe, that they're, you know, protected while they're there. And something bad happens to him and his family, and now they have to worry about if that's going to come down on them. Are they going to be drawn into it? So there's an intrigue and espionage and, you know, it's almost like spy movie thriller type stuff, even though they're not actually spies or doing anything along those lines. It still has some of that feeling where they're in a land that they're not necessarily familiar with. Only one of them speaks the language. You can't really trust anybody. And a lot of that fish out of water stuff. So I really enjoyed it. It built a lot of tension. It told a good story, and I love the artwork. Just Matthew Dow Smith is one of my favorite artists these days.
Nice.
So seeing him on that book, and usually he does a lot of stuff in black and white, and this one is full color, so it was interesting to see his work in full color. It almost looks like a Tommy Lee Edwards style when it gets the added color in here, so it was really good. I enjoyed that one quite a bit.
Sure.
And then Lantern City, this is the steampunk adventure of the television show that's in development right now. This is this giant steampunk city where you've got the poorest people on the low levels and the richest people on the high levels, and one of the low-level guys killed a guard and stole his uniform and basically wormed his way into the upper society.
Sure, I remember this now, yeah.
Well, he's now found himself as the personal guard for the guy who's head of the city. So the guy who's like the supreme leader, he's found out that this guy really isn't a bad guy.
Hmm.
That for all his life, the way he's hated these rich people on top and the way he's you know, thought about the way that they hold him down and the way that they, you know, use them, he realizes that the people at the top are as much stuck in their lives and their circumstances as the people on the lower level. That even when they want to affect change and do something in order to, you know, lift the bottom people out of poverty, they try to do anything, it somehow always works against them because they're never trusted. You know, they never believe that, you know, how could they actually be helping us? It always leads to more revolution and riots and every time, you know, things just blow up in their face just as much as the people at the bottom who are trying to, you know, fight against the people above them. Everybody is always threatened by everyone else, regardless of what station they were in life and what they're trying to do to better themselves. And so he now finds himself in this place where he doesn't know what to believe anymore. He doesn't know, you know, his whole life has been built up towards, I'm going to get to this guy and I'm going to kill him. And now that he's spent time with this guy, he realizes that he's actually a decent guy. And he's, you know, just a victim of his circumstances as much as everybody else. So now it's a question of where does he go from here? And at this point in the series, it's, you know, slated 12 issues. And then after the 12, if it does good, they may do, you know, more. But we've gotten past the halfway point. So now at where we're at here in issue 7, everything starts to flip itself over. That everything he thought was true is not true. And everything he worked for, he now saw was not worth working for or was not what he thought he was working for. The people he thought he could trust, he really couldn't trust. The people he thought he couldn't trust, he really could trust. You know, all of these things are starting to come forward. So I love the interesting way that they built this whole thing up, and then now that you're familiar with it and you understand it and you see how everything works, now it's tearing it all apart and showing you another side of things that you never thought of before. So it's gotten, you know, the first few issues were just fun because it's steampunk, so you wonder, you know, how are they gonna make the ships fly, how do the elevators work, you know, all that kind of, you know, funky stuff that you see with the gadgets and whatever. But as the story's built, they've actually built a really good story, and I've enjoyed it a lot more than I, you know, honestly, than I thought I would. I thought I would enjoy it, but I've enjoyed it more than I actually thought I would.
Cool.
All new, all different Marvel.
Yay! We're about it.
They still make those?
Ha!
Before, so I guess
I was going to say, before we jump in, we're going to show off our haul of variant covers and Marvel hip hop covers this week. I did track down every single hip hop cover this week. We have the all new all different Avengers by Jim Chung. I picked up a print of this. This is pretty hot. I still haven't hung my prints, by the way. Friend of the show, former guest Sanford Green's take on the Pete Rock CL Smooth cover for all new Hawkeye. All new, all different Hawkeye.
Same here.
Nice. We have the cover for Illuminati, which is an interesting read this week by Brittany Holloway Brown. It's a take on the Power album from Ice-T.
Yes.
We have, I don't know if I'm ever going to read this, but Carnage number 1, Welcome to the Dark Side. Shout out to Redman.
I like the cover, but since I'm probably never going to read the Carnage series, I had to pass.
I like the cover. That's pretty much the what made me buy it. I have the Web Warriors number 1 by shout out to Brooklyn Damian Scott. This is I'm trying to remember which album this is, but you know, it's very I'll get into this when I do my my quickie. It's probably going to be a rapid review of Web Warriors, but there's a couple of images in this that you know really hit home and made me, you know, brought a smile to my face. We'll put it that way. We have the Wolverine cover. Did you happen to pick up the Wolverine cover?
My comic store and Second and Charles did not have that one.
Wow, this is the one that was easiest to find, I think.
Yeah, I thought that would be the case as well, but
right.
They and had, finally, plenty of other variants for it, but
gotcha.
Hip hop one.
Gotcha. And finally. Shout out to the Fugees, the Ultimates cover.
Oh, that's what that cover was? Oh, yeah. Damn it. Of course, now the two coolest ones I did not see anywhere.
This is one of the coolest covers.
Actually, the one I was looking forward to the most this week was the all-new, all-different Avengers.
Yeah.
I like that cover.
Yeah, that's the Roots, Illadelph cover. But honestly, the cover I'm looking forward to the most is, I think, coming out next week. It's the Ms. Marvel cover. No, the Ms. Marvel cover. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill cover.
Oh, that's next week too.
Yeah, that's the one when they first announced this whole series. That's the one that caught my eye right away. You know, but for some of the old school albums, you know, that one I thought was done so well.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some really nice alternate covers out this week. You know, these monster covers. You know, a lot of them were pretty well done, even though. I think most of us don't recognize any of these old-school Marvel monsters.
Or does anybody anywhere recognize a lot of these old-school Marvel monsters?
Well, there's wasn't the Simonson, the Fin Fang Foom one?
If that was this week, we didn't get it.
No. There's a couple weeks back. I remember picking up. That's probably
Fin Fang Foom.
Exactly. That's probably the one that everyone recognizes. So
I guess before we actually get to the number ones and other all-new, we should do the...
Secret Wars!
Wait, we should do Thor's 4 first.
Okay, yeah, exactly. No, but Secret Wars is like the whole
shebang.
Secret Wars story. Yeah, we'll cover Secret Wars, we'll cover Thor's.
Sinister, whatever, Squadron Sinister.
Whatever.
Thor's 4 leads into Secret Wars the same way that Siege led into the last issue of Secret Wars.
Yes.
So it is helpful to read Thor's 4 first. Otherwise, I read them the opposite way.
Same.
And I was like, what the heck is going on? And then I read Thor's. Oh, okay. Now.
Yeah, same. I made the same mistake. I wish someone had clued me in the way they had clued me in about Siege.
I tweeted it on Tuesday.
Oh, I'm sorry. See? I didn't. I missed it.
If you'd follow me on Twitter.
I do follow you on Twitter.
At PCN _ dirt.
That's funny. Anyway, so Thor's number 4.
It's the finale, Unworthy Thor and Ultimate Thor take on, I forget which Thor it is now.
Rune Thor and Destroyer Thor.
Thor's fight, Jane Foster Thor from 616 leads a rebellion, something happens where Ultimate Thor's hammer gets shot to...
Spoiler alert! Post-Secret
Wars, I guess?
Yes! He throws it so far that it leaves the Secret Wars continuity.
Or it leaves him when he dies, like a Green Lantern ring.
Right.
The one thing was I started reading this and I'd forgotten what happened at the end of 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go back and read 3 real quick, and I'd forgotten that 3 told you so much of who was behind it. All this one really had to do was just show you how it ends. But
right.
3 is the one that really told you who did it and why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I guess the one thing you could get out of this a little bit more was how interconnected, even though all these Thors are from different worlds, the Jane Fosters, the... Donald Blakes, yeah. The way that even though they're all different universes, different versions, they all still have that connection, which means that there's something more core to Thor than just himself. It's the whole package deal. Whereas, if you look at the different Peter Parkers, there are some where it's Captain Britain becomes the Spider-Man. There's some where it's a guy in Bangladesh who becomes a Spider-Man. It's not always Peter Parker-centric, whereas for Thor, it's always Thor. Thor always has a connection to Donald Blake. Thor always has a connection to Jane Foster. So there's something much more, key to the character about having those connections.
Right. I was going to say they actually play on that, or at least they touch upon that in Web Warriors. We'll get to that when I do a quick review on it. I was just going to say, I had a great time reading this. There's a lot of great action in this.
I enjoyed it, but it was still basically just came down to, hey, let's get back, have a big battle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big battle goes to the bigger battle that's happening in Secret Wars, and that's really the end of it. You know, it was just not the talky-talky issue. It was the fist-pounding issue.
The action.
Right. Yeah, which is what Secret Wars is also this month as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I need to go back and read Infinity Gauntlet 4, I guess, because I definitely forgot everything that happened between that when that came out and then this week's issue 5, I think it was. Yep, Infinity Gauntlet number 5, which I haven't finished it yet, but okay. I think I have a couple more pages to go. But I don't know if this series, it started strong to me, but as it's gone along, it's kind of just gone downhill for me.
I don't know if it's downhill so much as we've come to the conclusion that there's a certain select few of these Secret Wars miniseries that really matter to the greater story. You know, one was Siege, out of nowhere. The other one, another one is Thor's. This one is, I like this as a standalone story. I like this as almost like a what if. I don't think this is necessary to the greater Secret War story, and I think that's to its detriment.
I don't know if I so much mind it not tying in the Secret Wars as much as I think when Dustin Weaver took over doing the scripting of it, it just, like, I do appreciate the, family bond set up amongst the Novas, but like Thanos in this issue battling his past self, I guess that seems stupid, and that bugged me a lot. I did like the family dynamic, but besides that, it was just kind of like, I kept flipping the pages, kind of like just waiting for it to end.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. It wasn't the most satisfying read. I'll give you that.
And I did not read Squadron Sinister yet.
That's another one that I was kind of disappointed in the ending, because I think Roddy Cat touched on this in his notes on the on this book this week. You know, we have a resolution to who the traitor is in the squadron. We know who it's been, and ultimately we have an homage in this book to scenes from The Dark Knight Returns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's actually a panel in this that says FM was here, as in Frank Miller.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a super subtle little note in like one of the in the background, but when you flip past it, you'll recognize it immediately. But I think one of the biggest criticisms is that we know that there's going to be a Squadron Supreme series coming out of Secret Wars, but there's nothing here, pretty much nothing here, that leads you into that series. There's nothing here that really leads you to... It doesn't prime any interest in a new Squadron Supreme series, and I think that's the most disappointing part of this.
Okay. And that's it for the Secret Wars books, right? Oh, and Secret Wars number 7, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get to Secret... I was about to say, we'll get to the big one now.
So, I guess I forgot after reading... I read this, and I read some interview... one of the interviews with Bree Vord and Jonathan Hickman on CBR, and it was like, oh yeah, this was the issue that was split into two.
Yeah.
Because the story... And you can sort of tell... going back and thinking about it, you can tell, I guess, how it was split up and how stuff had to be stretched to fit two issues, but... This is kind of like the Thor's issue, where it's like the big fighting issue. Everyone fight.
Was anybody... The reveal of the Prophet happened in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
What was your feeling about that?
I didn't guess it myself after reading whatever last issue until I read an article or someone's speculation online. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that is that person.
But, to me, I don't know, should we spoil it? Because it happens in like the second page of the story.
Yeah, they only treat it as a big deal. It's like, surprise.
They don't treat it as a big deal. That's the thing.
Yeah, Maximus is this Prophet who you really didn't see much of in the actual story anywhere. You heard them talking about him a couple times, and you saw these, you know, scenes in the background or whatever. And then they reveal that it's Maximus, and I actually had to sit there and go, wait, who? Like, I had to think about that for a while. Okay, Google, help me out here.
Right.
Figure out who that was, and I was kind of like, oh, that's...
You just couldn't remember from the Inhuman stuff, right?
Well, I don't read Inhumans. I mean, I only knew that he was one of those random guys who appeared in the other group with the incursions. Killing off people, but that's all I really knew him from. So to see him on there, it's like, oh yeah, I guess they had to find something for that guy, but other than that, I didn't really care much about him. I wasn't surprised by the reveal. It wasn't one of those, like, oh, it's a key character of the Marvel Universe, and, you know, it's a Steve Rogers under there or something like that. It's just like, oh, it's that guy. Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. I do like the progression with the Black Panther and how everything's kind of been tied together now with the moniker that he was given when New Avengers started.
I thought that was pretty... I thought that was pretty poetic. I thought, it became useful all of a sudden, right?
Right.
And, you know, like, if you thought Hickman wasn't playing the long game before, you definitely see it now.
Yeah, he joked in his interview that it's like, this was issue, like, 177 or whatever of his, basically all his Marvel work.
Yeah, this is Jonathan Hickman's Marvel Universe, issue 187. Like, you have to go back to his run on Fantastic Four and pretty much everything he's done since then, because it somehow all ties together into this.
Unreal.
Which, on the one hand, awesome, but then on the other hand, I'm so much less excited about all new, all different Marvel, because it's not this long epic anymore. There aren't these little threads of that story. I see so many of these new, all different number ones, and I'm like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
It's weird because I remember the anticipation with Hickman. For whatever reason, and I think it was stoked by his run on Fantastic Four. You know, like, you just sort of understood that there was going to be something deeper to the Avengers stories when he started. You know, unless I'm off. I may be off base, but that's definitely how I felt when I was picking up that Avengers run when it first started.
What about it?
I just felt like it was going to be, you know, there was going to be a much longer game being played, and it obviously played out. They may have even teased it that way as well.
See, I didn't read any of the Avengers stuff, so I didn't pick up on it until... Probably about
when it got darker. I gotcha. Well,
they did a soft relaunch at some point. I forget when it was. I want to say it was about halfway through New Avengers. There was another, maybe when it was all new Marvel instead of all different. And you could really tell that the books were tied closely together. And that's when I started to realize there was something more going on, and I was interested enough to go back and read the older stuff.
Gotcha.
You know, which is why I feel kind of, you know, as soon as Secret Wars is over, I'm kind of let down by a lot of the stuff in the Marvel Universe, because there isn't anything epic building up anymore.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I'm glad that, we have issue 7 out. I know there's still a bit of a wait until 8 and 9 come out, but I'm glad that we're hurtling, you know, we're on the downhill slope now. We're hurtling towards the end, and I'm pretty excited to see how this ends up.
Yeah, I need to see what happens in Fantastic Four.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately they tease a lot of that stuff in this week's books too. Last week and this week's books.
The tease.
Yeah.
Okay. What else came out this week? Ultimates number one?
Yes.
Yes, it came out.
Did you read it?
I thought it was all right. I do like the twist with the villain that was unexpected.
Yeah. You know what? There's a couple things with this. One, right, the basic premise is that this is a fairly capable, high-powered Avengers team that's being operated from one of the holdovers of the Ultimate Universe. They're operating from the Triskelion, so they're establishing the Triskelion in the main Marvel Universe, and it's also operating as the new Wakandan embassy to the United States. But I thought one of the interesting things that they've introduced, I don't know if they've done this before, they may have, but one of the things they introduced in this issue that I was first introduced to in, what was it, the Avengers Facebook game, or wasn't there a game where you had to accumulate ISO 8?
Yes, yeah, I remember what you're talking about.
Yes, they introduced that into the Marvel Universe in this story, in the first couple of pages. And I thought I was like, wait a second, I recognize this ISO 8 stuff, and now, you know, it's interesting that they're making that a story element, for one, and two, you know, this is more of a, you know, introduction to, you know, the current status quo of the team, where they all are, you know, what their capabilities are, how they're, you know, what the team dynamic may very well be down the road. You know, I definitely like this group of characters that Al Ewing's been able to put together. I like the dynamic. I like the characters. I like the team dynamic. And Kenneth Rocafort's art, I feel like whoever's embellishing this needs to do just a, you know, they need to provide just a little bit more depth to his art. His art is fine. You know, the line work is actually very, and when I say fine, I mean the line work is very detailed, and there's a lot of fine details to a lot of the art, but I think that whoever is embellishing this, either with ink or with color art, definitely needs to do a little bit more to smooth out some of the give the art a little bit more warmth and depth. But that's just me being kind of particular about how Rocafort's art, I think, is being enhanced, or maybe not as enhanced as it could be. Let's put it that way. You know, otherwise, I thought the story was fine, a real basic, you know, setup. And you know, when they get to the twist that Tim was referring to, I thought that was well done, because it didn't exactly take you to take you where you thought it would be going. So you know, I like that. But otherwise, I think, you know, I think what's really positive in terms of the you know, this book is that I like this assemblage of characters. I think it's they play off each other pretty well. I think that Ewing is having a lot of fun writing this particular group of characters.
Yeah, it's more of I guess maybe by issue 4 I'll probably have a good feel on whether or not if I'm really digging it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to like Al Ewing's Marvel work though, so sticking with it.
Right. I liked Al Ewing's Marvel work, but I felt like the new Avengers stuff, you know, just the characters that he was given to work with just didn't, you know, they didn't really make me open my wallet. We'll put it that way. I look at these characters, and a lot of these characters I'm looking forward to reading, and that really, you know, that gives me a lot of hope that the story is able to carry on as long as Ewing has stories to tell.
Okay. All new, all different Avengers number one.
As I dig through this pile of books to get to my copy.
Very underwhelming. Not very underwhelming. Just, I don't know, I had my hopes set up.
I was disappointed in the fact that this was a story and a backup story.
Yeah, and I was expecting Mahmoud Azrar to do the main story. But the backup was nice with Nova and Miss Marvel.
I was going to say, I don't mind Adam Kubert's art. Adam Kubert is, you know, my of the Kubert brothers that do comics. I like Adam's art. It's just that, you know, the villain in this, underwhelming. It's Nova-centric. You know, if you recall, wasn't this the character that was in the Nova the whatchamacallit, the Secret Wars issues.
What was that?
Or am I thinking? Oh, no, I'm thinking of Yotat. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. That horrible guy.
Yeah. That horrible guy. I think this character, wasn't this character in the Nova issues before Secret Wars?
Yes.
Like the Chitauri?
The Warbringer.
Right.
And it's
right,
funny, yes, going back to last week's show that I listened to but wasn't a part of, I think, Doug, you were saying you weren't keeping up with Nova. I thought you had read Nova the last series in Nova because your son liked it, right?
Well, we read issue one of this new series.
Oh, okay.
Not of the last one, no. He liked
the
Nova.
Last one, though.
He liked the Nova character from the cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Sam Alexander character.
Yeah, but we never really got into the other series. But this series with a number one allows him to... Because he's the type that you can't give him, like, issue 14, you know? He's got to have one. If he can't read one, then he's not as interested.
Because we used to talk about how we both were excited for reading Nova 20 or whatever issue it was. I guess I
You're misremembering.
Yeah.
So... You were mentioning earlier about Mahmoud Asrar's backup story or the second half story that involves Ms. Marvel and Nova and their first encounter with each other, their first attempt at a team up, you know, and it's very much, you know, teenagers meeting and finding some mutual attraction and being very awkward. You know, in terms of that part, you know, that was fine. I honestly thought that you know, the way they split this book into two stories really detracted from the main story, and that's really my biggest complaint about this book, is that it felt like what I was getting was, you know, in terms of the main story, just wasn't there.
I enjoyed Mark Waid's writing of Cap and Iron Man, the little back and forth between them at the beginning of the issue.
Right.
This didn't feel like a 8 months later story. You know, how everything else is you're dropped in the middle. It seems like he's still doing the origin story of the Avengers instead of just dropping us and the team's already formed, which I guess is slightly, you know, different take than how other comics have been doing it, where the team's already formed and we're picking up story midway through.
I don't know about that. I think that this is still a forming of the Avengers, because one of the key aspects of this is that they've moved out of Avengers Tower, and you know the dynamic between the you know, these characters is still yet to be established. You know, they haven't quite assembled yet. You know, to coin a phrase, right?
That's what I'm saying. He's doing the origin where everything, all the other books were being dropped in.
I see.
When the team's already formed.
Gotcha. Well, I think 8 months later, you know, these characters are coming from such disparate places that I guess he's sort of forced to, especially given the fact that this incorporates Miles.
Yep.
So, all right. Let's see. What else do we have in terms of these number ones? I'm going to stop going to my physical copies because it's taking a lot of time digging through this awful pile.
Here, I can do one real quick because I actually read Carnage number one.
Oh, no!
What?
Yeah.
Did anyone else here read it? Anybody? Bueller? Okay, Dirt, I think it's just you.
Yeah. Well, and the main thing was, again, my son wanted to read it. It was rated T+, so I wanted to read it first to see what it was. And what it basically comes down to, it's Carnage. So there's a spot where he's in a diner at the beginning. There's a bunch of dead bodies on the floor around him. So I'm pretty sure that's where it comes from, even though you don't see any of the quote-unquote carnage unfold. It's there all around him. So, you know, I read it. It was not that big of a deal. So I, you know, said, okay, you can read it. And basically what it comes down to is a survivor from one of his earlier rampages is featured on a news report, and that sets him off to track her down to basically finish the job. And what you have when he goes to track her down is you find that the government has actually set up a trap to capture him. It's almost a Jason Goes to Hell, the Final Friday, if you ever saw that at the beginning, where the FBI has set a trap for Jason in order to destroy him. That's what they're trying to do here with Carnage. They set a giant trap in order to grab him. And among the people they have there is they have Eddie Brock, who now has some symbiote called Toxin.
The white symbiote.
Yeah, so he
That's
says,
how I remember. I couldn't remember the name, but
Eddie
I know
Brock,
that it's the white symbiote.
And so Eddie Brock actually says he's basically his own grandfather, because Carnage was a descendant of Venom, and now Toxin is the descendant from Carnage. So he's now his own grandfather by having this Toxin symbiote with him, but he's part of this deal where they're trying to trap Carnage and destroy him, and of course something goes wrong, and without, you know, giving away everything that happens, they find that they're in a much worse situation having lured him into this specific location trying to destroy him than if they had just, you know, let him be, so to speak. So it was interesting enough. I mean, there was nothing... I don't particularly care about the Carnage character, but they did a good enough job setting up all these other characters that are part of this task force, this team that are bringing him down, that I felt that there was enough story there and enough other characters that I enjoyed it, you know, fine. There was nothing spectacular about it that, you know, really blew me away and made me excited for the series, but there was nothing so horribly offensive that I was, you know, upset that I wasted my time reading it or anything like that. It wasn't the worst thing I've read, but, you know, it was fine for what it was.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, that's all.
All right. It sounds like at least there's something interesting there. So, you know, yeah, maybe there will be something I pull up.
It's one of those things where I can see what the story is that they're telling here in this arc, but I have no idea where they go once this arc is finished. You know, something is going to have to happen in this that sets up something else in order to move the story forward, because this particular story, for what it is, doesn't really lend itself to an ongoing series.
Maybe it's supposed to be a fugitive, but with a very unsympathetic fugitive.
Well, maybe, but even then, that had to resolve itself.
That's true.
It's definitely one of those, you know, new Carnage series that's really secret, really a 12-issue series.
Oh, yeah, we only meant that to be a year-long series in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyone read Illuminati number one?
I did. It's funny that you mentioned that. That's one of the other ones I wanted to touch on. So I read this with very low expectations, and I found myself pleasantly surprised. So the story story focuses on Titania, who is a character who gained superpowers during the first Secret Wars, and basically starts with Titania trying to turn over a new leaf, you know, using that cliche of semi-reformed criminal. And, you know, she's trying to make her way in the world without having to revert back to the classic, you know, robbing banks to get by. So, you know, what we have is her attempt, at least, to try to establish a civilian life. And it goes pretty horribly wrong. And she gets approached by Power Man and Iron Fist in a really weird cameo. And, you know, as they try to put her down, who appears but the Hood? And I think the last time we saw the Hood, he had been depowered. But I don't know if that's accurate. That's what I remember. My memory may very well be failing me at this point. But the Hood apparently has gained a good measure of magical power and kind of reestablished himself as the Hood that we remember from a few crossover stories ago. And now he is trying to form a super bad guy, super villain team to pull off various jobs. What they plan on doing is, spoiler alert, they plan on breaking into Asgard and grabbing as many weapons as they can. That doesn't sound like the best idea in the world, and the characters that they pull together are pretty interesting. Honestly, I think the best part of this issue is that you actually felt bad for Titania. You found sympathy. You know, she struck a very sympathetic chord, you know, as a character. So I give the writer on this. Is it Al Williamson?
Who?
Joshua Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
Looking for the writer.
Joshua Williamson.
Yeah, Joshua Williamson is the writer. Sean Crystal on art. The art is actually pretty good. It's mildly reminiscent of some of the facial structures that we get from Lionel Francis Yu, but a little bit more cartoony. You know, like I said, it was a pretty interesting first issue. It was interesting to see Titania depicted, you know, in a very sympathetic light. So I'll be reading the second issue, I believe. It's an interesting take on these kind of B and C list supervillains.
Cool.
I was about to say it's not as funny as whatchamacallit. What was the Spider-Man? Superior Foes.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, it's not like that. It's not in that vein.
Oh yeah, Web Warriors count number one was out. Oh, before we move on from Illuminati, Roddy Cat, his note says, "I am intrigued and will check the next issue."
Nice.
Quadrant Sinister number four. He said, "The inevitable but satisfactory end to this story, but where is the tie to the new book?" Thor's number four says, "There was a shootout with hammers." Secret War says, "How do you top a shootout with hammers? Bring all the hammers and all the other opposing factions to an all-out brawl to beginning and end of the world, with plots and schemes abound." And Infinity Gauntlet number five, he said, "They formed like Voltron and Zigzag happened to be the head. Enjoyed reading this and it ended in a decent manner. I'm good with it. Reality wins again?" Question mark. All right, now Web Warriors.
All right. Did anyone else read Web Warriors?
Yeah, I actually did.
I did not.
Okay. So I got a kick out of this first story, Doug.
Yeah.
The first page made me smile. The very first page.
This was another book that I had no interest in reading, but my son wanted to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to look through it first to make sure it was okay. And I actually enjoyed it 1,000 times more than I expected.
Yes. The very first page, Doug, and I'm semi-spoiling just a little bit. I'm going to ring the bell. Spider Godzilla. They had me at Spider Godzilla.
Well,
as soon as I saw that on the page, I was like, I'm going to keep reading.
I did not read the Spider-Verse miniseries as part of Secret Wars, but apparently that's where this grew out of.
Yes, but it also grew out of the Spider-Verse story that was happening in the main Spider-Man titles.
Mm.
You know, because obviously that's where it starts, and then you know it kind of flows into some of the Spider-Verse stuff in Secret Wars. I didn't read the Spider-Verse Secret Wars stuff. I think that had to do a lot with I think played out more like a what if. I think the Spider-Verse series that happened before Secret Wars, I think, is where a lot of this stuff comes from. But I could be wrong. I'm going to have to, you know, kind of review the Secret Wars limited series to see what that was about. But from what I remember, it read more like a what-if story.
Well, because Philip is definitely interested in reading that Secret Wars series, so now I'm going to have to go back and read it.
Okay.
Well, I enjoyed Web Warriors. One of the things that I really enjoyed about it is just the alternate Earths, you know, these alternate universes that have all these different spider characters.
Mm-hmm.
How something that we had mentioned before with the Thors is that it's not always Peter Parker or Peter Parker's daughter, or you know, you've got Gwen Stacy, but she's still connected to Peter Parker. But then you have these other random characters like Brian Braddock, who is Captain Britain, we know him as, but he became a Spider-Man, you know, in his world. And you've got a Spider-Man from India. You've got you know, these characters that are not just Peter Parker in the 1920s, or, you know, Peter Parker if he was a talking pig, or, you know, Peter Parker this, Peter Parker that. It's just the Spider-Man character could come from a million different places, and that's how they, you know, played it out in the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always enjoyed, that's one of the things I always enjoyed about DC, was that DC always explored these parallel universes, the Earth 2, Earth 3, whatever, and this is definitely Marvel doing that type of thing, where you have Earth 100075, you know, you have Earth 616, you have Earth, you know, whatever, all these different worlds, and they freely jump from world to world, even if they don't need to, which I thought was fun. They jump to a world where Egypt is still the dominant, you know, society, even though it's modern day, so there's techno pyramids in the background, and everybody has those funky raw headdresses and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but they're still eating at a Loco Taco, you know, enjoying the food. I just love that, you know, parallel Earth stuff. And what sold me on it was not Spider Godzilla.
Spider Godzilla, didn't you?
It was the Spider-Man animated world. That they jump into. It's like I just hit him once and there was this bright flash of light and now he's knocked out. Is he dead? What happened?
That was awesome. That was awesome. I love that part.
It was really fun, and I, you know, my son reads a lot, as many comics as I'll let him read, he will read, which is kind of tough in today's comic market, you know, to find things that are always appropriate and available, but he said this was his favorite book that he's read in a long time.
Nice.
Not only the best this week, but it was just one of his favorites to read, period. And I had to agree with him. You know, I love the way they tied in the TV cartoon universe with everything else and made it part of, you know, actual continuity at some point. You know, the way that Spider-Ham is just walking around and no one questions that there's this, you know, talking pig version of Spider-Man as part of the group.
Right.
It's just a lot of fun. It's fun in a way that you don't see much anymore, which is why I was surprised it's rated T+. I didn't see anything in this book. There was not one thing in this book that I thought made it a T+ book. There was no bad language. Nobody died. There was no violence. Nobody.
Well, there's. I mean, I think it's just a matter of opinion in that, in, you know, in that regard. I was going to mention that the 60 Spider-Man cartoon continuity that pops up at the beginning of this does appear in the original Spider-Verse. Crossover.
Okay.
So this is, I believe, the second time that we've seen, you know, but it's a great way to start the story. You know, I don't think the first appearance of it involved this many spider characters jumping in.
Well, and they also mentioned the fact that it's their training ground.
Right.
They can go in there and they can just, you know, beat up on the guys and it was no big deal because no one really gets hurt and no one's ever, you know, really damaged if they go in and beat people up in the cartoon world. So, that made sense from that, you know, standpoint that they would use that as a toy, so to speak, to play with, I thought.
And it was kind of cool that I was going to say, it was pretty cool when Spider-Gwen is like, I just swung back here, I could not tell you where my web line's attached to.
It's just kind of in the sky somewhere, yeah.
So it was fun. I got a kick out of that too.
It took all of those things about parallel Earths and about the different Spider-Man universes and played with them.
Right.
They weren't just backdrop to some story.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
the universes are as much a character as the characters that are running through them, and that I think is what I enjoyed so much about it.
Right.
Plus the reveal that we got at the end of Electro, mm-hmm. I thought was great.
I thought it was a very interesting take. It was an interesting play on the web, and this is something that that probably doesn't mean as much to you because you didn't read the first Spider-Verse crossover.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the whole web, the way that one of the Electros here says, "You spiders aren't the only ones crawling web," and it makes total sense.
You just spoiled it, and you didn't even ring the bell.
Oh, I spoiled it.
I was trying not to spoil it, and you didn't even ring the bell on that one.
What? All right, fine.
You already said that that Electro was in it, so
exactly. Yeah,
but you were spoiling what Electro was doing, and
right.
Anyway.
I did spoil it. I apologize.
But anyway.
If anything, I'm hoping to get people to read Web Warriors because it was that fun.
I have not been a fan of the Spider-Man books since Peter Parker returned, but I did enjoy this a whole lot.
Yeah,
I'm definitely sticking around for.
I'm very surprised at how much I like this book. This was I can't say that this was a candidate for Click of the Week, but I definitely enjoyed the story.
And I would say to people, don't let the rating fool you. If you've got a child who's, you know, 8 to 12, they're not a T+ reader, but I didn't see anything in this that, to me, said that it should have been a T+ book. I don't know if that was a mistake or, I don't know what happened, but definitely felt more accessible to younger readers than what the rating was.
Then it appears, I gotcha. All right. So let's see. What else do we have? What else is on our plate?
Only other book I read was Uncanny Avengers number 2.
Oh, yes, with the thing I guess we should ring the spoiler bell about.
The Uncanny Avengers will begin a new member, at least by issue 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
The time-traveling mutant himself, Cable.
Wait.
Back with big, humongous metal arm and everything. Yeah.
Shoulder pads and big guns.
So I'm psyched as a
I love the retro fan. I was gonna say I love the retro design for Cable that we get on the next to last page. I was gonna say that what this issue really does is establish the status quo now for mutants. More so than the X-books. Now we understand what the situation is for the mutant population post-Terrigen Mist, post-Terrigen, cloud. So I think this book, more so than any of the X-books, really establishes that and gives us an idea of what it's like to be a mutant in the Marvel Universe going forward. And there's some groundwork laid for... especially from Cable's recap of what his understanding of history is. We know what the Avengers Unity Squad is kind of in for and what they're trying to combat. And at this point, spoiler alert, the reason Cable has to go back is because they don't succeed.
Which has been done before, but hey.
Right. Cable, come with me if you want to.
Cable should know everything that happens in the past.
Body slide by one.
Yeah, he's got a new AI, Bell. Yes. See how that goes along. I like how when he's looking at the paper, he's like, makes gruntled noise, Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Since they have history together, and they have a limited digital first series going on right now.
Right.
And I think the only other number one was All New Wolverine, which I've
Did anyone else read that?
I'm not.
Just very quickly.
There was also Hawkeye, but
oh yeah, that was Hawkeye. See, there's too much. I kind of want to get that Bengal cover of All New Wolverine. I like his art.
Flip Damn to the Bengal cover.
This one Dirt's got up right now.
Oh, that's the Bengal cover. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The main cover. Did anybody else read it?
I did.
Okay, you're the only one, I think.
Okay. Well, just, I'll incorporate this into kind of a rapid review. What we now have is, this is definitely 8 months into the future where Laura is, adopting the Wolverine identity and the moniker. She's on missions, and we think that she's on her own, but it turns out that she's not. She's actually kind of flying, not a true partner type mission, but there's definitely some help that's not very far away that can kind of come in on a wing. Hint, hint, wink, wink. If you've been reading any X-Men lately, you can figure out who I'm referring to when I say that. There is, I want to say, a couple of cool twists in this. There is a weird twist at the end where, one of the things that Laura's trying to do is be Wolverine, but not, kind of be the best parts of Wolverine, but not have the crazy berserker side and the murdering way too many people that shouldn't have been murdered. Stuff that Logan kind of went through for much of his career as Wolverine.
Ooh.
Yeah, right. Self-control, God forbid. But what we have is that one of the twists at the end of the book, which I won't completely spoil. I'm not completely on board with this Wolverine book, but. As much as I am with Web Warriors, I kind of spoil Web Warriors on purpose because I want people to read that book. The twist at the end of this book is kind of, it's eh. But knowing the art, let's put it this way. If you know where, what Laura's origin is, and if you know that, then you understand that there is the possibility of more than one clone. I'll leave it at that. Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Will there be a war of these in the future?
I don't know. I don't know if Professor Miles Warren is involved. Anyway, that's like I said, it's okay. Wolverine has always been that solo book that I have kept up with on an infrequent basis, so I don't know if I'm going to keep up with this particular version of Wolverine on a regular basis, but this was it was an okay launch issue. And who read all new Hawkeye?
I did. Am I the only one?
Yeah, I didn't finish it.
I didn't read it.
Get off my list.
Okay, here's
got it over here, but
the book basically takes place in two different time periods.
Right.
So you have the quote unquote modern day, and then you have this future time period, and you can see the Hawkeye in the background of the cover with the long hair and the beard. Mm-hmm. Is the future version of him, and that's actually future version of Kate if you look closely. But
right.
the main problem I have is whenever they do a story like this, where you've got part of it in the present and part of it in the future, with the nature of comics being what it is, even if Jeff Lemire is sitting down and saying, this is what I see the character would be in 25, 30 years,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter in the long run.
Right.
Because whatever he says is going to happen 30 years in the future is not going to happen 30 years in the future, because 30 years in the future, comics are going to treat this character like it's 5 years from now. That's just the nature of comics.
Or less.
That was my issue with the DC future, whatever, Futures End books.
Yeah. So while he's crafted a story that it follows up what happened in the last series.
Right. It directly, definitely does. It definitely jumps right into, some of the possible ramifications of what happens at the end of the last series.
If you didn't read the last series, then you really need to read it in order to get into this one, because it is directly a continuation
Agreed.
Of that.
Agreed.
The problem I have, though, is that any of the future stuff I just know is not going to matter. So if you want to read this story as kind of a what-if corner of the Marvel Universe, just a character study on how broken Clint Barton is.
Or can be based on some of the decisions that he made in the last series.
Right. Then it's an interesting standalone story. But this, it feels like it can't possibly really be a part of the Marvel ongoing continuity because of the way he's doing the, if you want to call it time travel,
right.
Showing you the future and the present at the same time, the way it unfolds. It's a well-done story for what it is. Mm-hmm. I just kind of felt let down. Left out? I don't know.
Possibly.
Let out?
Let down.
I just kind of felt at the end of it like none of this is really going to matter in the long run. And especially with these characters, it's the kids from the last series who have come back, the mutated kids who
right.
are basically walking living weapons. As powerful and as deadly as those kids are, again, there would be a lot more ramifications to those kids existing in the regular Marvel Universe. They would be showing up in Avengers books, or there would be a Hydra agent going after them or something. Other than what's this quiet little story about Hawkeye trying to live his life and have a lower profile and Kate feeling like she's left out because she's not part of the Avengers and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
It wasn't what I thought we were going to get out of the book, and I was just a little disappointed overall.
Right. I'll give you my take on this, and one of the reasons why I've read Fraction's run on Hawkeye so closely is that there seemed to be a spirit of fun, even though a lot of the comic was not fun because it dealt with, you know, the tracksuit mafia and Hawkeye constantly getting beat up and, you know, his neighbors dying and paying the price for being associated with him. But there still seemed to be a fun spirit to the book, and I don't get that sense from the last series, and I don't get that sense from reading this first issue. So I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to stick with this.
Yeah, there was really... He tried to put a little bit of humor into it, and you could feel these echoes of the past humor that had been in the previous series, but it just didn't feel... It obviously didn't feel the same. They wanted there to be some sort of disconnect between Clint and Kate to play off of to set the story up, but it just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you had this feeling, of course, because we're jumping ahead because of Secret Wars, it's 8 months later or whatever on all this stuff,
right.
that something has happened, time has passed, some decision was made that she didn't like, and they had an argument over whatever, and she's never gotten past it, but not having seen it,
right.
it's just out of left field, like, oh, now they're cold roommates
mm-hmm.
who just have to spend time together because that's who they are, but they don't necessarily like each other, and just, I don't know, just didn't feel right.
Right.
Not a huge fan of this particular number one.
Yeah, same here. I wasn't that, I didn't read it with any real enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So are we in rapid review time?
Sure.
Yes.
It's getting late. Very quickly, I did read Darth Vader number 12. I did read Chewbacca. Both good. I know that I'm a bigger fan of the Chewbacca miniseries than I think anyone else is here. I think my biggest, the biggest attraction for me is the Phil Noto art on this because it's just very well done. It's, the line work in traditional comics would, I think, have detracted from what he was trying to pull off with Chewbacca. I think the digital art allows and the coloring allows him to really capture, without having to deal with too many fine lines, the appearance of Chewbacca and how he moves and how he would stand and react to certain things happening around him. We get the continuation of the story with the mini damsel in distress that Chewbacca has to help and help save her family and these people who are being being possibly enslaved by miners who are looking to strike a deal with the Empire. The Empire is obviously the overhanging sword of Damocles type that sort of hanging in the wings, waiting to pounce. Darth Vader number 12. We have the resolution. I know that Derp mentioned that he wanted to read this. I don't want to spoil too much. We have the resolution of the thievery plotline and his and Darth Vader's second in command, whose name I can't recall, but was very close to cracking the scheme. You know, I'm trying to speak as vaguely as possible, but I know that you're familiar enough with this. And I did not actually read issue number 11. I don't remember reading it. So I probably did read it, but it seemed kind of jarring that we got from what I remember to where we are now in this issue, where Darth Vader is basically chasing down, spoiler alert, basically chasing down what the Empire thinks is the villain, the thief, we'll put it that way. You know, there's some thievery involved, if you recall. And, Darth Vader has to obfuscate. There's our $10 word for the Comic Chronicles tonight.
Knocked me unconscious with that one for a second.
he has to mask his plot, obviously. And, he has to do a little bit of gymnastics when it comes to dealing with the second in command for this particular mission that the Emperor assigned to him. I don't want to get too far into it, but it does definitely lead into Vader Down. There's a big setup at the end of this for Vader
Down. I may read this tonight before I go to bed then.
That's out next week.
Yeah, there's a big setup in this.
Need to get caught up on my Star Wars books by then.
Yep. Last for me for rapid fire is Captain America White number 4. I'm a big fan of these. I like these color theme books that are basically emotions. And I'm a fan of Tim Sale's art. The story sort of reads, it's almost by the numbers. Not that I'm saying that Loeb's not coming up with anything new or different to kind of tell us about the relationship between Captain America and Bucky, and some of the relationships that they develop in World War II with other Allied fighters. In while they're in Nazi Germany and trying to infiltrate occupied France, there are a lot of kind of cool little nods in here to some of the misconceptions, let's put it that way, about what Cap may have been like as a soldier and as a kind of a novice hero. But ultimately, it sort of does play by the numbers when we get to the end of this issue. I believe there is one more issue to this. It does say to be concluded. So it's sort of hurtling towards the end of this miniseries. I'm glad that it's finally out, but I don't think it's as interesting as I think my personal favorite of the color theme books is Spider-Man Blue. And I would recommend anyone who's a fan of Spider-Man, you don't even have to be a big fan of Spider-Man to enjoy that particular one.
I've got one to add real quick. The rapid fire review is I actually did read Spider-Man 2099, number 3.
Yes.
And I actually, I have to say, Spider-Man 2099 trying to differentiate itself from the regular Spider-Man book is playing up Miguel O'Hara as more of a, shall we say, a superior Spider-Man than an amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
Which for me is awesome.
He has a different approach.
He's much darker. He's much angrier because of the things that have happened to him the last couple issues. He's definitely more willing to, shall we say, take risks and finalize his battles with certain villains. So this is a book that I had almost no expectations going into. It's just, my son likes Spider-Man stuff, so I wanted to read it first before he read it, and I found myself enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would, and especially the darker it's gotten and the more it's taken that superior tone, the more I have enjoyed it.
you just want a badass Spider-Man. That's what
I do.
That's funny.
They pushed out the Spider-Gwen book all quick and willy-nilly because of fan reaction. I'm surprised they didn't come up with some superior Spider-Man, Doc Ock in a spider clone body somehow. But
well, to me, this feels like the spiritual successor of that book, where you have a guy who's, you know, he is a good guy, he is a likable character, he is working towards a laudable goal, but because of the things that he's been through, the way it shaped him differently than Peter Parker is, he's willing to do things much differently than Peter is, and I've enjoyed the last couple issues. It lost a lot of the fun. Like, the first issue set it up as being much more fun and whimsical, and then you had that ending, which literally crashed out of nowhere.
Right.
And then since then, it's been dark and a lot meaner, and he's having a hard time, you know, coping with the grief in his life, and I've just enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. That's a lot of books I'm finding this week I've enjoyed a lot more than
I thought. Yeah, you know what's funny is that, and I know I mentioned this with issue number 2, Sliney's art, there's something about the way he's refined his art that is so much more finished looking. And smoother looking than it was on Fearless Defenders. There's something, I don't know what it is that he's done, but it looks that much better.
See, I never read that title.
It looks a lot more digital mannequin looking people to me.
You mean now or before?
Now.
Now? I just think it looks cleaner now. And I actually did read, or I may have skimmed a lot of this book, because what's funny is that digitally, the red and the blue...
The text boxes are hard to read.
Text boxes are hard to read digitally, so yeah. I find that's kind of hard to make out sometimes. I want to kind of track down this in a physical form and read it, but ultimately this is it's a surprisingly good read. And I know I said this about issue number 2, and I have to concur with you, Dirt, and you know, upvote the Spider-Man 2099 number 3. I like this too.
Mm. All right, you got one right.
Ha!
Ready for Clits of the Week? Say yes.
Sure, and we'll say Roddy's is a cheat.
It is.
Cheater, Roddy Cat.
He selects Thor's number 4 and Secret Wars number 7, with the caveat technically they are part 1 and part 2 of a story. No, they are not. They are separate comics.
Oh, no. That's funny.
My click of the week is Superman American Alien number 1.
Nice.
Actually, you
muted yourself.
Oh, I'm muted. Okay. I said you can't pick that one because that's my pick.
Oh, wow.
I loved it. I just love the storytelling, and I love the way it explores those moments of Superman's life that you never saw before, never experienced before. So for me, the artwork, like I said, it can throw you off a little bit from time to time, but overall, I love the story.
It was a fun read indeed.
Interesting. All right. I guess it's down to me. I'm trying to decide between Secret Wars number 7 and one of the all new, all different titles that dropped this week, because I actually did enjoy Ultimates, I think, more than some of you guys did, because I'm a fan of these characters and I'm enjoying the fact that they're together. But I think I'm going to go with Secret Wars number 7 because I just like that we're getting closer and closer to a resolution, and I like, even though it sounded like, now that, you know, once you guys reminded me that this is the parts of the story that's been stretched out to encompass issues 7 and 8, I did sort of sense that now that I think back on it, but otherwise, I really thought that, you know, they had jammed a lot of story into this book already. That's what it felt like to me. I felt like this was an almost overstuffed issue, and there's so much going on. But it was all good stuff. And like we were saying before about how the long game was being played, and spoiler alert, being King of the Dead actually came into play. You know, that part, you know, kind of, you know, hit me as a longtime reader of Hickman's Marvel work. I was like, yeah, you know what? I see it now coming together. And that was a pretty cool callback. So Secret Wars number 7 for me this week. Click of the week. But surprisingly, Web Warriors number 1, close second. And yeah, Dave 2 number 3 or 4.
Yeah, my son definitely wanted me to make sure I pointed out the Web Warriors with his.
Dave 2 number 3. Yeah. Nice. I like, listen, that Web Warriors, I may go back and read again because it was that much fun.
I need to make sure I have it on my iPad to read all this hype for it.
All right, cool.
All righty. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat, who's not here tonight with us, is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Doug is at PCN_dirt.
That's me.
Yay!
Hi, Mom.
That's him.
As we hurtle towards episode 150. Unbelievable.
We're going to make it there, people.
We're almost there.
Alrighty. So we'll be back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with the Nerd Science episode of Comic Book Chronicles. And we are signing off.
Peace!